So here I bring the concept of the microbiome as really something you need to care for. You need to prevent the disease, not cure it.
Hi, I'm Alex, and welcome to the X-Health Show, where I talk to visionaries behind the latest innovations in healthcare for the extra health of the future. We're surrounded by mountains in Monte, Switzerland, a bio-art technological park dedicated to innovation in biotechnology and diagnostics. Dr. Paolo Refinetti is a bioengineer and statistician that completed his PhD at both EPFL and MIT. He lights up when speaking about the tech they develop and about large batches of vanilla and cinnamon sticks he buys from Uganda and Sri Lanka. REM Analytics is a Swiss startup that develops novel tests to analyze the microbiome. They can measure the colonization of a specific probiotic strain in human microbiome and what happens when the diet and lifestyle changes. You'll hear about gut microbiome, a super important role of small family of bacteria, the difference between probiotics, prebiotics, postbiotics, symbiotics, and more. Paolo, you have your favorite bacteria, gut bacteria. Tell me about them.
Yes. So it's actually a family of bacteria called the bifidobacteria.
Bifidobacteria, okay.
Bifido stands for bifurcating.
Right, yeah.
Because long, long time ago, when people first looked at them, they saw them under the microscope and they saw that they would split and form Y-like shapes. So they were bifurcating. So, hey, bifidobacteria. So they've been known for a very long time, and they're probably one of the oldest known bacteria. And despite the fact that in our gut, they are reasonably rare in the sense that they do not account for a large percentage of the total bacteria, they play a disproportionately important role in our metabolism and in maintaining our health.
So if you say like they are not, well, there's not a lot of them, right? Is that what you're saying in the gut among other bacteria?
Exactly.
So what's the percentage or like what's the range?
That's a very tricky question. I would be hard-pressed to give a precise answer. The real answer is it really depends.
Mm, I love really that answer. Depends. That's my favorite answer. It depends.
It really depends on what you eat, how you live, who you are, how old you are, and so on. What I can say is that they are supposed to be the majority in babies, and then they gradually reduce in relative abundance to the other bacteria that slowly colonize the gut as we grow, but they continue to play a key role.
All right, so what's their role? What do they do?
The next thing to say is I started by saying bifidobacteria is not one bacteria. It's mm-hmm. a family of bacteria.
Right.
So in there, you've got lots of different types of bifidobacteria, different species of bifidobacteria. And within those, each of these species, you have different strains, so different subtypes of each of the bifidobacteria.
You know, now I'm just thinking, you know, because we had Virginia from Yoni Solutions before, and we were speaking about Lactobacilli.
Yes.
Family, and also like
Absolutely.
A lot of species there. And now we're speaking about bifidobacteria family. I love that.
Exactly. And the concept is reasonably similar. If you look, the lactobacilli are the most important family of bacteria for vaginal health.
Right.
They also happen to play a role in the gut health. But now, I personally believe that the bifidobacteria play a more important role. Again, belief, but...
Well, it's a belief, but you're also a scientist, okay? So, I mean, I believe that you base your opinion on something, right?
I'm supposed to do that, yes.
Yeah. So, what's the role of this family? Or
so, that's the thing. Despite the fact that we have been eating bifidobacteria and considering bifidobacterium-based product as healthy for almost a century, we still know surprisingly little about the actual details of what they do. The thing we really know is some people, when they take bifidobacterium, they feel better. And it's only been in the past few years, or last few decades, that we've really started delving into what they're actually doing and why they're contributing to our health and well-being. So I'm not going to go into an extensive list, but I might just give you a couple examples of things that have been documented or that are known.
Please do.
We know, for example, that there are specific strains of Bifidobacterium that can produce vitamin B6 or folate, which is an essential vitamin for baby development, but also for mothers when they're pregnant, and that generally contributes to our health and well-being.
Yeah, I guess like the folate is something that, I mean, each woman who wants to get pregnant or is pregnant, I mean, they are advised to take them, right?
Absolutely. I can give some other examples that are maybe less well-established, but where I have reason to be confident, such as the metabolism of vitamin B6 or pyridoxal. And basically, you have two forms of vitamin B6, the active and the inactive one. And what Bifidobacterium breve can do, for example, so it's a species of Bifidobacterium, is to help turn vitamin B6 from inactive to active.
Okay, active means
useful for our body.
So we can have actually an unuseful vitamin B.
Absolutely.
That we don't use, that is somewhere...
That passes through, is lost, and serves no purpose.
Okay.
Unless we can turn it active.
So that's a major role then.
Absolutely. These are all major roles. And again, we don't understand all of these roles. There is very good demonstration that, for example, some Bifidobacterium can be useful for improving the mood of people that take them. And there are good clinical studies showing that. How they do it? Unknown. But hey, active vitamin B6 is an autism treatment.
Oh, it is.
Or has been reported to improve symptoms, at least in a couple of clinical studies, as well as to reduce anxiety and stress. So we have some links there. And again, these are all tentative links, but they all point to a small family of bacteria that has co-evolved with the human that work together with us to make a lot of different molecules that we need in order to be healthy, in order to be happy, in order to digest properly and generally feel better. But the really interesting thing is, fine, they do all of that, but they're only a small portion of the total gut microbiome that we actually have.
And thank you for mentioning that. So what is this whole microbiome? I mean, I have a feeling we hear more and more about it and the importance of it, of basically taking care of our gut microbiome, because it influences like...
Not only the gut. You mentioned Virginia and Yoni Solution before, and I think there we have an amazing demonstration of the role of the vaginal microbiome in health, and how taking care of the vaginal microbiome can improve not only the vagina, but a lot of other things as well.
Okay.
So if we define the microbiome, it is the ecosystem of microorganisms and others that have co-evolved, that live on and around us, and basically that live with us. It is very difficult to provide a general definition or to express what a general role of the microbiome is. And this is, I think, where I would like to bring what the philosophy of REM analytics is and what we try to do in this field of microbiome. So the microbiome is massive. You've got lots of different types of microbiome. We've got the gut microbiome. But hey, the gut, how long is our gut?
How long it is?
The gut is more than 5 meters long, possibly even reaching up to 7 in some cases, if you consider both the small and the large intestine or the colon. And it all has a microbiome, and it's very likely not to be the same at different positions in it.
Okay. And you didn't even mention the stomach, right?
I didn't even mention the stomach.
Okay. And then we have also skin microbiome, the vagina microbiome, we already mentioned.
The mouth, the scalp, the nose, the lung.
And there are different colonies there.
They are entirely different. They serve different functions and they serve different roles. They're different bacteria and we've co-evolved with them. And we're just starting to discover what these different microbiomes and their niches are.
So you're just saying that, I mean, we still don't know a lot about our microbiome or the human microbiome.
We know effectively very, very, very little. So I think we can say we are barely scratching the surface.
But
you do not need to fully understand something in order to make something useful out of it.
And what do you make out of it in REM Analytics?
So that's the thing. At REM Analytics, our philosophy is that fine, you've got all of this microbiome, you've got all of these niches, and they all play their own role. But ultimately, what's interesting, let's say from a business perspective or from a consumer perspective, is what can I do with it? And the what can I do with it is not necessarily depending on understanding everything. What I was giving before, the example of the bifidobacteria, but then you pulled out the lactobacilli. The bifidobacteria are a reasonably small family of reasonably well-characterized and understood bacteria that play a massive role in our health. So to give an example here, we do not need to understand the whole microbiome or how the bifidobacterium all interact with one another and their interaction with all the other hundreds of thousands of different species, strains, or whatever that are in the gut. The only thing we need is to understand how the key and most important bifidobacteria interact with specific health aspects and provide useful tools to consumers that can help them improve their lives.
We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by The X-Health Show and me, Alex. If you still haven't, please hit follow at the top. That'll help me bring more of these visionaries to you. Thanks a lot. Stay awesome now. Back to the episode. Okay, and where did you start? I mean, was that the point that you started, or was it the point that you arrived at?
This is the point we've arrived at. I mean, REM Analytics, as the name says, analytics, we make measurement tools. So at our heart, what we are is bioengineers, and I insist on the engineering part. We build measurement tools.
Tests.
We build tests, exactly. More than tests, we build everything that goes with the test. I mean, a test, it sounds simple. You test and you get a result. But I'm obviously biased, but civilization is based on testing. Society, what holds society together, is measurements and tests.
Okay, I love that point of view because then, yeah, that's the knowledge behind it, right? If you know something, you can make decisions based on what you know.
That's the first thing. I mean, civilization started with taxes.
Okay, let's not go that way.
Right? No, it's a simple thing. And if you're going to tax someone, you need to know what he has.
Uh-huh.
Thus was accounting born. And you don't need to understand everything. You just need a simple proxy and a few rules that allow you to have an estimate and to define some rules and some measures by which you're going to keep people accountable.
Okay.
And this is why I'm saying civilization started with measurements and continues to live with measurements and can only function with them. So again, when I say we make tests, the question, it's not only testing, but it's trying to build everything that goes around a given test.
Okay, so what do you measure in microbiome?
So again, very tricky question. We do not measure the microbiome. We design tests that measure specific things within a microbiome that can directly lead to useful actions.
Okay.
So that is what we do.
Okay, so like you measure, for example, I can imagine these bifidobacteria.
Yes.
Anything else?
So currently, what if I take our example, let's take the example of bifidobacteria. So what we have now developed and have used in several clinical studies is a bifidobacterium test.
Mm-hmm.
What this test allows us to do is to get really good relative abundances of some bifidobacterium types or bifidobacterium species.
How do you measure that? I mean, how do you, what are the samples? Yeah, this is what I wanted to ask.
So the samples are stool samples. And this, again, is interesting in and of itself. We measure these bifidobacterium in the stool, and we trace the relevance of the measurement we do in the stool to health aspects. Mm-hmm. And based on that, we can recommend actions.
Okay.
The key here is keeping it reasonably simple. Because we are measuring a limited number of species that we, I'm not going to say understand well, but somewhat understand, that are somewhat well characterized, that we have some idea of what they're actually doing, enables us to take useful action based on the results.
Can we then, because you mentioned the studies, can we maybe take one of these studies as an example?
Sure.
And say like what you measured in them and what were the recommendations after, you know, the tests?
Absolutely. So I can give one example. So this was a study, it's part of a big European project called NutriSure that is now coming to a close. And the idea was to do personalized nutrition for the young people, so teenagers. Teenagers who are obese or have diabetes. And today what they receive are standard dietary recommendation. And the idea was, can we give them personalized recommendation that would be based on their microbiome or their metabolites, meaning the their biochemistry. And so we collaborated here with a large consortia, but let's say the key actors were the Ospedale San Raffaele in Milan, who actually ran the study, recruited the children and followed them. We received the stool samples here at REM Analytics, and urine samples were sent to the Ospital Universitario de la Fe in Valencia, who did the metabolite analysis.
Mm.
And taken together, we were looking for signals that would allow us to give specific dietary recommendation based on these measurements, actual measurements, not simply food questionnaires.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I think we have measured a few signals. For example, I go back, obviously what we measured were bifidobacteria, but we found that a couple specific species of bifidobacteria were significantly more present in obese people, in obese teenagers, and significantly less present in healthy control teenagers.
What are they?
So one example that I can give is that, for example, Bifidobacterium infantis was significantly more present in obese teenagers than in healthy control teenagers.
That's interesting, because I had also this question about, like, can we have the wrong microbiome? So are these the wrong, you know, bifidobacteria, or...
I'm not sure we can say they are the wrong. What I'm giving here is an observation. But what I can tell you is that Bifidobacterium infantis is absolutely essential for newborns and early development, but seems to be correlated with obesity later on. So I'm not going to say it's a wrong bacteria, but you need to have the right amount of it. Not too much, not too little. So again, I don't think we can say you have a wrong bacteria, and I don't think you can say there is a wrong microbiome. What I can say is that for every person at a point in time, you might have some work to do to improve your microbiome.
Okay, and what were the recommendations for these obese teenagers that had more of this?
The standard, I mean, what we were looking for then were correlations with food that they were eating that we could then use to change. So one of the simple things that came out is drink less soft drinks.
Okay.
Big surprise. But again, it's nice when you find validation of what our standard advice. Eat more proteins. But for example, what we also find was eat more protein, yes, but reduce red meat and increase egg consumption instead. So these were some interesting data points. Again, these are correlations. And we then went ahead to provide them with actual dietary recommendation based on that. And we will be processing soon enough the data of the result.
Mm-hmm. So that's the one study. But you also, when we spoke before, you mentioned there was also another study of infants. So
newborns,
preterm,
yes.
Yeah, preterm, newborns, and...
full terms.
Right.
Absolutely. So always as part of this NutriSure project, we have done another study on preterms and full-term newborns, where we were looking for many different things. But most importantly, we were trying to understand how the impact of donor human milk versus own mother's milk. You might not be aware, but if a baby is born preterm, the mother often doesn't have enough milk.
Mm-hmm.
And since human milk is the best food for a newborn,
yeah,
what we rely on is on donor human milk, which is pasteurized. But then the question is, how does that affect the development of the baby. One of the things that came out of the study is, for example, that the composition of mother's milk changes during the lactation period. It's not always the same. So there is an evolution that matches the baby's need.
Yeah.
But if you're giving donor human milk, you lose that.
Yeah, like at what point is the donor milk actually donated, right?
Exactly. You also lose the live bacteria that are in the milk.
Because it's pasteurized.
Because it's pasteurized. The question was, how does this affect? We still haven't found a general answer. We're still crunching through the data set that we have, which is massive. But a few things that I can give is, and I'll go back to my vitamin B6. When the baby is born, the mother's milk has a very high concentration of active vitamin B6. And babies have very little Bifidobacterium breve.
Very little.
Over the first 6 months of life, we see the percentage of Bifidobacterium breve increasing in the gut of babies. And we also see that in human milk, the concentration of active B6 drops.
Oh, that's very interesting.
And the concentration of inactive B6 increases.
Okay. Wow. What can we do with that information?
What we can do, for example, is to measure the concentration of Bifidobacterium breve in newborns and either give more Bifidobacterium breve, for example, to ensure that they can properly activate their own vitamin B6 and not lead to deficiencies.
For example, when they take the donor's milk, right? So somehow substitute it.
Or when they take even mother's milk. Because if the mother's milk is reducing the amount of active B6 and increasing the inactive one, then you need to have the Bifidobacterium to match.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Again, these are for the moment suppositions, but the data is there. It needs work. But we also have the biochemistry that tells us that indeed the Bifidobacterium can do this transition from inactive to active B6.
That's very interesting. But okay, could you maybe now say a bit on this technical side, like how do you measure it? What technique do you use? What's the you're smiling now. It's like the your thing.
This is my thing. This is really my thing. Again, we build measurement tools. And as I said before, I think society is built on measurements. So I believe in this. This is really my topic and my passion is how do you go about measuring things better? What we've developed here at REM Analytics is what's called Advanced Testing for Genetic Composition, or ATGC. It is a combination of many different pieces. Some of them existed already, others we adapted, some we built from scratch, and then we put them all together. At the core is something called cycling temperature capillary electrophoresis.
Please unfold that.
I'm going to unfold it. So capillary electrophoresis, separating DNA. Now, what Professor William Tilley at MIT and his team back in the 80s, so before I was born, came up with is a way to separate DNA, not on how long the pieces are, which is how traditional capillary electrophoresis works, but based on the sequence. So what are the letters in the strand? And that's how cycling temperature capillary electrophoresis began, and it was then perfected by Per Ekstrom from the Norwegian Radium Hospital, with whom I did my PhD, who co-supervised my PhD thesis. And what I brought was the bioinformatics, how to use software to basically design tests that would rely on cycling temperature capillary electrophoresis, or CTCE. And back in the day, we were looking at the mitochondrial genome, so for cancer, so something completely different. And at the end of my PhD, we came up with the idea of, okay, how can we use this to do microbiome? And the question was, why microbiome?
Yes, this is also one of my questions, right?
So, why microbiome? The microbiome is a big mix. And what our technology is really good at doing is measuring mixes. That's where it's really excelling. And so, the idea was, okay, we have the microbiome. You have lots of things in there. And what we can bring is the ability to design quantitative tests. So, tests that don't only tell you what's there, but how much you have of each. tests that will measure this precisely, reliably, and that can be used in routine diagnostic, and that will also be cost effective. And that's how we started, actually. But as you see, the difficult part is figuring out what do you want to measure. So you've mentioned the lactobacilli. I've mentioned the bifidobacteria. There are others. But every time you want to design a test, you need to know what you want to measure. You need to know why you want to measure it. And you need to build a test for that purpose. And this might be a little bit controversial, but there is no such thing as a general test that can measure everything.
Because what, you don't have like the measurement tools to see?
It's more like different. It's more like it can't exist.
Uh-huh. You can't predict everything. What's that?
And in a general sense, look at it from your own life experience. If you're doing 150 things at the same time, how well can you do each of them? Not so well. And if you're trying to pay attention to 15 different conversations, how well will you remember at each and any individual such conversation?
Okay, so what you're saying is you're measuring targeted parts of microbiome.
Yes.
So targeted species or targeted families, how do you target them?
That is the real question. That is the real difficult question. And that's possibly what keeps me awake at night very often. There is no rule, and that's the whole problem. You want to measure things that are important. Important to whom? Important for what? Important how? So let's get back to the lactobacilli, maybe, which is a very good story of who, why, and how they're important. The vagina and the vaginal microbiome have a prevalence of lactobacilli. It has been well established over the years that the lactobacilli are the most important family of bacteria to keep the vagina healthy.
We'll be right back. I want to say thank you for listening to this episode. If you find it interesting and feel particularly generous today, leave a review, hit this star rating. I'll be able to continue with the X-Health show for you. 3, 2, 1, and back to the episode.
Let's maybe have a disclosure here. Like, so REM Analytics is the Swiss company that Virginia mentions developed the test for yes. Uni Solutions, right?
Yes, that's we, exactly. And here is the whole thing. So Uni Solutions came up with the idea that these were important.
Okay.
And that we needed to measure the lactobacilli. And it was not enough to know, okay, lactobacilli, fine. But we needed to know which one, because that would play a key role in understanding what are the individual needs of each woman.
And yeah, exactly. And also I remember Virginia speaking about like each woman has like different species that are the most important for her.
For her, exactly. And this, again, this was the, I'm going to call it genius of Virginia, was to figure out that you had this one family, but it's not enough to know lactobacilli. You need to know which one. And there is no one good lactobacilli to rule them all. There is not one lactobacilli you can give to everyone and it's just going to magically work. Women's are different. And she needed a test that would find this difference, that would therefore enable solutions to be given according to the individual needs.
And can we now translate it to gut microbiome? Is it still something that you research? Or?
Sure, exactly. And now what we're trying to do now with the bifidobacterium is the same thing. Of course, different environment, different science, different reality, different everything. But the concept is still the same. Rather than looking at the whole microbiome, let's try and focus on some things that we can understand that do something that we know is important. And so let's look at the bifidobacteria. Why? Because they play a key role in the biochemistry of some critical metabolites like branched chain amino acid, vitamins, polyphenols, antioxidants. You've all heard about those. And let's try and find a way where we can, again, understand the needs of individuals and give them the right bifidobacteria or the right supplement to go along with the bifidobacteria, the right metabolite for the bifidobacteria. And here is, I think, where we can bring in the term prebiotic.
Okay, and other ones, okay? Because you mentioned prebiotics, but there are also probiotics, synbiotics, and even postbiotics. Like,
yes.
Can you say what are the differences?
Sure. So we start with the probiotic. Probiotic is the old term. These are live bacteria.
Right, and this is what probably everyone at some point took when you take antibiotics. Then you are usually suggested to also take probiotics at different time, right? So that they don't interfere with each other.
Exactly. But again, you eat naturally occurring probiotics when you eat yogurt or when you drink raw milk, the few people that do, or when you eat raw milk cheeses, such as good raclette from Valais. Then you have the prebiotic. Prebiotic is food for bacteria, stuff that bacteria eat. A prebiotic usually, or at least how I understand it, is specific for some bacteria. And these can be sugars, such as human milk oligosaccharides, so very specific sugars that some bacteria will eat and not others. They can be specific fibers, but they could also be amino acids, or even, as I was saying before, some types of vitamins that will be processed by bacteria.
So probiotics are the living bacteria you administer.
Yes.
And the prebiotics is like food for the existing bacteria you already have.
Yes. And then someone invented the postbiotic. If I can give my opinion on postbiotics, they are the result of poor regulatory choices by the authorities.
Okay. Why is that?
Basically, probiotics have always existed. There's been probiotics around humanity for as long as there's basically been humanity, fermented foods or others. Now, what has been happening in some areas is that it became impossible from a regulatory perspective to give live bacteria.
Okay.
And so what some people have tried to do is, hey, what if I just kill the bacteria and give dead bacteria? Does it still work?
Does it?
Sometimes.
Okay. It depends.
It depends. And that's a postbiotic. The term has now evolved to mean metabolized, produced by the bacteria. So rather than giving the live bacteria, you give the things that the bacteria has produced in an incubator, basically, or in a fermenter tank,
okay,
in a flask. But it can also be just dead bacteria. Those are postbiotics.
And we still have synbiotics.
Synbiotics is a mix of any of the above.
Why would you give anyone the mix?
For example, you might want to give the probiotic with its prebiotic.
Yeah, it makes sense, right?
So you want to give the bacteria with the food for the bacteria.
Right. And okay, so what's then the idea? Like, you work on these bifidobacteria and on the tests, right? And then you have the tests, so you know what kind of bifidobacteria you have them. I can imagine, like, you can quantify it.
Yes, we can quantify them very precisely.
Yeah, what can you do with the knowledge?
That's the thing. Today, we are looking for partners, and we have found a partner with whom we're formulating a panel of solutions. So a panel of synbiotics.
Awesome.
Bacteria with their specific food that we can give to people based on their bifidobacteria composition.
For the reason of?
Many different reasons. That's the thing. Our first target is going to be obese teenagers, for example, because we have a clinical study, because we have good data on that one. But I can also see a very near application in mental health, and I'm not going to call it mental health, but general mental well-being.
You mentioned this B6, right? Importance.
I mentioned the B6, but one could also look at the tryptophan and the serotonins. And again, the metabolism of tryptophan into serotonin precursors is bifidobacteria related. So again, we have a role that these bacteria and their metabolites are playing in mental health.
Okay, I'm just, you know, like thinking, I mean, we're not doctors, we're not dietitians, right? Can we think of curing diseases, or can we think of supporting basically the brain, or what's...
I'm not going to be making strong claims here, because again, this is the beginning. Mm-hmm. This is the very early beginning, and I'm not going to hide that although I'm stating facts, this is tentative evidence. It is based on observations. It is based on in vitro models, mainly meaning that you take bacteria, you grow it in a dish, and you see what they're eating or what they're not eating and what they're producing.
So let me just say, I mean, guys, so we have a scientist here speaking, you know, so I mean, everything that he's saying, unsure, is based on like huge amounts of research or the analysis of the literature there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, when I say that it's not sure that the link is tentative, meaning that I have a reasonably good amount of data that leads me to believe that. What I clearly see is that a simple bifidobacterium test with the right probiotic and and the prebiotic mixed together could help make some small improvement in your health, being improving your mood or helping you lose a little bit of weight or reducing your risk of gaining weight. Again, if your BMI is 32 and you're obese, it's not the probiotic that's going to cure you. It might help a little bit if you diet, exercise, and do all the rest of the things that you need to do. But if you're a generally healthy person with a slight tendency to gain weight, it might help reduce this slight tendency. Again, I don't think you can cure severe depression, but having the right bifidobacteria, boosting a little, rebalancing your vitamins a bit might help improve your mood that tiny bit and making your life that little much better.
So we're speaking here actually about the balance, right? So the when you are on one or the other edge, I mean, you need some other solutions.
Yeah.
But then to keep the balance, you may know your status and then, well, support it, right?
Exactly. But then you have extreme cases, really extreme cases. You got, and here I'm going to cite name because he deserves, you have Matt Farmer in Lyon, who cures cancer with a probiotic.
Okay.
It's one specific type of cancer. It's a very complex probiotic, many millions and years of results, but it works. It really does. The data is incredible. And this is not circumstantial data. This is a double-blinded, placebo-controlled clinical trial with lots of people.
Wow. Okay. I was speechless, basically.
So it is possible. We can get there. We can, with the microbiome, you can treat diseases. We just don't have enough knowledge and enough data to do so today in many of the other areas where it would be possible. I'm mentioning now mental health and well-being. If we start today with our bifido test panels of solution, it will take time. It will take time. It will take data. It will take people using the service or using the system, buying the solution, reporting back. It will take clinical studies. It will take lots of investigation to really crack it open and maybe get to the point where one day we might be treating depression with probiotics, symbiotics, diet, and exercises.
Wow. So that's the big vision.
Again, it's a little bit my dream. That's not what we will be doing at REM Analytics. We will be developing and improving the test that makes sure that the data is right and enables this to work.
Okay, so what are the tangible next steps?
So what I'm hoping to see happening right now is we will be, together with a partner, launching a first complete solution for bifidobacterium, meaning a test and a small panel of symbiotics that where we can measure the microbiome and recommend a solution. And what we hope, and again, we are test makers. We are not consumer-facing company. What we hope is that we will find the commercialization partners that will be taking up this product and selling it in their geographies or marketing it to consumers, to doctors, and to people. And this will be the start. And from there, we're going to learn, we're going to refine our test, we're going to work together with the partner that manufactures probiotics to see if we can improve the formulations in combinations with the test so that we can then provide our customers meaning distributors, with better products, with better scientific evidence, with better papers, clinical trials, and arguments so that they can then go ahead and sell this to consumers. And ultimately, we hope that it's going to make consumers feel better. I think the key here is that we want to be able to make consumers feel better. And If I come in microbiome, I think there's another element that I need to bring in. And now is the moment in terms of feeling better. The microbiome is an ecosystem. And as an ecosystem, it is reasonably easy to keep balanced. But it is almost impossible to recover if destroyed.
Almost impossible?
Yes.
Why?
I think we always hear that about the Amazonian forest. The Amazon is a complex ecosystem. While it's there, it's there. You can cut a few trees, they grow back. You can remove some things, they grow back. But if you really burn out a big piece, you've lost it. You've lost the biodiversity. It takes years to come back. In fact, there is an experiment. If you look at Sebastião Salgado, the famous photographer in Brazil, he did exactly that. He took a piece of desertic area, which was his ancestral family farm, and replanted a forest. And he reconstituted the ecosystem, but it took a long time and a huge effort.
Okay, because it's a complex system.
Because it's a complex system. And complex systems are resilient to small pushes because they're complex. But if you break it completely, it's very difficult to restore. So here I bring the concept of the microbiome as really something you need to care for. You need to prevent the disease, not cure it. One bifidobacteria, the right bifidobacteria with its symbiotic, might significantly improve your general health if your microbiome is already kind of okay, the rest of it. But if you're severely sick, it's not going to do much.
So you need other solutions, and we're not going to go into them because, again, we are not nutritionists.
Well, in general, that now we're talking things that are infinitely more complex. We're talking about fecal microbiome transplants or other such nice things.
How can we lose it?
Take very severe antibiotics. You can be exposed to chemotherapy. There might be other things out there that will do that. I honestly don't know. Or you might have a very unhealthy lifestyle for a very long time. And then you've severely shifted your microbiome. And it's not one bacteria, one probiotic, or a small change of diet that's going to fix that. You need radical actions. And I'll be very honest, today we're not there yet in terms of knowledge, capacity, or anything else to get to go there. And this is why the first step is, if you're a reasonably healthy person, we can today provide you something that's going to make you that little much better, and that's going to help you stay on your balance and not go into one of these extremes. Prevention rather than treatment.
Well, in terms of, you know, REM Analytics being a startup, like, what do you consider success?
What I would consider success is the day when precision medicine actually takes up. That would be success for me. Is when, let's be like this. We've always been going into this direction of precision medicine. And I think even in our own lifetime, the amount of tests that we all do has increased. And the amount of decisions that are taken based on tests has increased enormously in medicine. Again, you can call it ambition or not ambitious enough. We are bringing one more family of tests. You have chemical blood tests. You can see ours as microbiome tests. They will be an extra family of tests that will exist as a toolbox for whether they be doctors or healthcare practitioners or others that can be useful to provide direct recommendations. And not only to doctors, but maybe to people directly. And that's, I think, what Yoni Solution is doing and what we hope other we will find the right partners to do with the bifidobacterium as well, is let why not empower people to prevent disease? You go to a doctor when you're sick and you need treatment. But I think prevention and well-being is the individual's responsibility. And so success is also giving individuals the tools to care for themselves, tools that are reliable, that are evidence-based, and that actually do something.
And again, from the startup point of view, like, what do you need to make it happen? What are the challenges or the roadblocks that you need something to overcome them?
It's a very large question to answer. I think the first one that I'm going to say is to find the right partners. Finding the right partners means finding the right people, finding the right companies, finding the right organizations with whom we can work. I think I've said it enough times, we make tests. But a test is only as useful as the decisions you can make with the test. If I tell you, hey, this is your bifidobacterium profile, or hey, this is your lactobacillus profile, it's not helpful.
No. I need to know, like, what to do with that.
What am I going to do with this? So there we start. We need a partner with whom we can work to together provide, hey, if A, do B.
Paolo, is there anything you're looking forward to?
I can be very positive, I think. We've now talked only about human microbiome, but in truth, there's microbiome everywhere. And we talked about food, but how is the microbiome affecting the food we eat? And more specifically, how is the soil microbiome affecting how we grow our food?
Oh, wow. That's a completely different level you bring it to now.
Absolutely. It's a completely different level. But what I think here I would like to finish upon it is we've only talked human and we've only talked health. But microbiome is everywhere and it has industrial application. It has other areas where it can have a massive economic impact. And what I'm going to open up here is that we're currently working on soil microbiome tests to help agriculture.
Oh.
And I'll ask a simple question to you now. Why is it so difficult to move away from chemical agriculture? And here we look to our right to one of the world's largest producer of chemical pesticides and chemical inputs. There's only one answer. It's the chemical tests. And chemical agriculture works because we've got really good chemical tests that farmers use and that enable them to take good decisions when it comes to chemistry. If okay. We want biological agriculture to work, you know what we need.
Tests and the replies to the tests.
The biological inputs, they exist. What we lack are the tests.
Hmm.
And that's...
That's the future then.
What we're doing.
Paolo, thank you very much for, you know, opening up this microbiome world.
Thank you very much, Alex. I hope I said things that are interesting.
No, definitely. Thank you for introducing, you know, the bifidobacteria and like their role in our gut microbiome. And for you guys, if you want to, you know, follow what REM Analytics do, please go to remanalytics.ch, which is remanalytics.ch. Thanks again.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm totally impressed by the audacity of researchers turned startup founders, doctors turned entrepreneurs, or ordinary parents turned healthcare innovators. People battling the battles that no one fought before for the extra health of the future. So if you see a startup posting on LinkedIn, show them some love, hit like, comment, that's fabulous. If you have a couple drops more of that altruism, follow the Exhale Show. Leave a review here. I'll be able to bring more of these visionaries to you. So a big thank you. You're awesome. See you next week.
The information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. If you have any medical questions, please consult your healthcare practitioner. The opinions on the show are Alex's or her guests. The podcast does not make any responsibility or warranties about guest statements or credibility. While the podcast makes every effort to ensure that the information shared is accurate, please let us know if you have any comments, suggestions, or corrections.